You're listening to Graphic Novel Explorers Club Podcast, an audio book club.
Happy holidays, explorers. I'm one of your hosts, Johnny, joined by...
Ho, 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 Dennis.
And sadly, no Frankie. I believe she's doing some repairs on Santa's sled. Today, we are discussing The Authority / Lobo Holiday Hell by writers, and there's a lot of them, Keith Giffen, Alan Grant, Tom Payer, and Will Pfeiffer, and artists Simon Beasley, Scott Iwahashi, and Kerry Nord. We hope you've read today's title because both of us have read the book, so beware, spoilers ahead. Explorers can share their opinions and thoughts with us by leaving a comment on our Facebook page or over on Twitter and Instagram at GN Explorers Club. Graphic Novel Explorers Club is available wherever fine podcasts are found, including YouTube. So today we are looking at, for our holiday special, The Authority / Lobo Holiday Hell. It's a two-part book. The first part is the Lobo Paramilitary Christmas Special. It's a ridiculous book. And then the second one is The Authority versus Lobo Jingle Hell. This was released in 2018. And for some reason, I thought Lobo always strikes me as like a 90s thing or 80s thing. I think that's of the, was that when the character was created?
I think he originated in the 80s, but he really came into being and his whole look as it is now in the 90s. And there's definitely a gap where I knew sort of the character from the comic book stores, but in the 90s, I kind of had stepped away from comics a little bit. I was more into manga and such. I knew a little bit about the character.
And drinking and partying and getting ready at college.
That too. And then
it's a big disruptor.
But I was aware of the character when he did appear in the Superman, the animated series.
And that's how I became aware of him, was in that series. He was often a thorn in Superman's side.
Yeah, I liked his characterization in the cartoon, although I did find him a little too 90s for my taste. It was very in your face, I'm tough as dirt, biker attitude, which has not changed at all.
He had a chain wallet, flannel tied around his waist, hanging down in the back, a Stussy shirt.
He's basically Rob Zombie, but superhero, maybe anti-hero.
Yeah. More human than a human.
Basically.
Complete side note here that this just made me think of, in one of the White Zombie albums, I think it might have been the first one, the song started off with like sex sounds. Like a sound of a woman having sex. And this girl I was dating many years ago, this was in Spokane, Washington. She had a cousin. She told me, this is so, I was like, what? I was like, I don't think most people do that. I guess her cousin, who was male, and his best friend would put that CD on in one of their cars. And it's very short clip. I think it's like 10 seconds long, something like that, the sound of this woman having sex. And I guess they would just repeatedly play it and masturbate in the car together.
What? Wow. Happy holidays, everyone. That's your gift from us to you. That image will hopefully get you through the cold winter.
Oh, before we get to it. Yeah, well, I mean, I think this was when the internet was in its infancy.
So still, maybe, get a magazine. I don't know, man.
And maybe it also reminds me of that episode of, God, what was the three friends who work in the telesales place? I forget the name of it. Anyways, and they all masturbate in the car together.
I'm sorry. I don't know these shows you're talking about, John. Are you sure you're not just talking about your own life experiences?
Well, in one case, yes. In the other, it's a comedy. But before we get too far into this, we are recording this remotely. So occasionally there may be sound issues. Second one is we had tried to record this with our friend Jake, who's a huge Lobo fan and is very knowledgeable about this, but we had some technical issues with that recording. So just with time constraints, a couple other things, we weren't able to re-record this with Jake. So Jake, if you're listening, we apologize for that.
RIP, man.
RIP.
And yeah, just once again to emphasize, Johnny and I are separate and not in the car listening to a White Zombie album.
I don't know. That's not true. Dennis is lying. So this book has a warning that says contains bad taste in the form of ultraviolence, icon bashing, and quote unquote the finger. More offensive than Christmas usually is. I think we just topped that with that White Zombie story, though.
Yeah, I think so.
So the story is ridiculous and over the top, but all of them are, which I think goes hand in hand with Lobo comics or Lobo appearing in your comic. But it starts off with this couple, Orifice and Ferret, who are in just dire straits. They're really worried about getting the gifts for the kids. And it's quickly implied that their worry is centered around whether or not their kids may kill them if they don't get them some gifts.
Yeah.
which I thought was like a very funny take on the Christmas season about gift-giving and expectations.
Well, and then just, yeah, they legitimately were terrified to the point of like they have a gun. They're they're just afraid their children will pretty much eat them alive.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but my first impression when I opened up the book and started looking at the art, I felt like it was very 90s, but I was all in. Like, it felt 90s, but I wasn't put off by it. Like, sometimes 90s art, especially some of the like extra roid ragey looking stuff that DC and Marvel were putting out at the time, really was off-putting. I actually kind of like this. It kind of had like a Tank Girl British feel. I don't know what the background of the artist is. I apologize for not looking back further, but it had like a heavy metal kind of vibe to it. Heavy metal being the comic and magazine.
Yeah, and, or 2000 AD or
what? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then I really was digging the vibe of it. Normally I'm put off by 90s art, but in particular this one, I was really feeling it.
It's good. So we won't go too far into the story, but a book shows up at their house mysteriously. And it tells this tale of Lobo being contracted to kill Santa. It turns out the Easter Bunny contracted Lobo to put a head out on Santa Claus, who's also known as Chris Crusher Kringle, who and it's shown that he's this brutal dictator because he starves his elves to keep them small, quote unquote, small, fit, and fierce. And Santa only participates in Christmas to keep his public image up, which, you know, it's like the dictator who builds a hospital somewhere for his people, but it's just an empty shell. And then, you know, like the UN comes in and expects like, oh yeah, he's got a hospital being built.
Yeah, but then, I don't know where this trope originated, and this is sort of related to it, but I'm always into Santa's operations being like a sort of paramilitary operation. Like, I remember like when I first saw the movie Scrooged in the 80s.
I think that's where it came from.
Right. That they had the whole Lee Majors saves Santa from terrorists and, you know, the day the reindeer fell or something like that. And I always loved the idea, whether Santa's the bad guy or Santa's defending himself against diehard level terrorists. I always loved that trope of bringing in modern action movies to the Santa workshop for some reason.
Yeah, because you wouldn't expect the two to be together. It's a good, yeah.
And then like our previous holiday book that we looked at also explored sort of a modern take on the Santa North Pole realm as well.
The Dennis is talking about The Last Christmas. Yeah, we did that in 2018, I think. Yeah, and basically the Easter Bunny represents this group of other holiday representatives or spirits, I don't know what you want to call them, that are fed up with competing with Santa's gift giving. They're tired of him hogging the light. A couple things that I really enjoyed in this book is one is just like you were saying, Dennis, the visual effects or the drawing, the illustrations, everything's drawn kind of, I wouldn't say, It's an organized mess, and it's reflective of how probably Lobo sees everything. Like, there was, I think they did this in an episode of Ren and Stimpy. Mm-hmm. So they did something like this similar in Ren and Stimpy, where I believe it was in a cartoon, but I read it in a Ren and Stimpy comic book, where Ren and Stimpy pull out their eyes and switch eyes.
Right.
And I can't remember who's Ren and who's Stimpy, but the dog, because he's such a piece of shit, when the cat puts his eyes on, everything's just terrible and gross. And when the dog puts the cat's on eyes, everything's like colorfully happy and drawn and like very like Disney cartoonish, like old Disney cartoons from the 30s. It's like, yeah, that's kind of what I thought here. I was like, oh yeah, that's how Lobo sees everything. I also like how Santa's house, it's always depicted as like this cute little cabin out in the North Pole. But in this, it's like a cross between Tony Montana's mansion and one of Saddam Hussein's palaces.
And you know, my complaint often with all the comics we've been covering is sometimes I'm really tired and over ultra violence. For some reason, I was all in for this. When he's shooting all the elves and their bodies are just being eviscerated, I thought it was hilarious, and I thought the artwork was great. I don't know why this is different, maybe because it's a holiday story and it's just the contrast, but I thought it really told how much carnage Lobo loves and how much chaos he likes to sow.
Yeah, especially the fight between him and Santa was great.
Oh, like you said, it was very Santa's interior area is very much like Scarface. It was it was crazy.
Meets a Hussein palace,
right? Just
ornate and gaudy and gross. it was really funny. And then lastly, the thing that I enjoyed the most, I don't know why I said the least, is Lobo's is going to make plans to use the quote unquote naughty list for his. I'm saying quote unquote a lot in this episode, but his list for his own purposes. It's a funny story. I enjoyed it. This is my first Lobo story ever outside of the Superman 90s cartoons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if I'd pick up more of these stories, but I really enjoy this twist that we get to read every year on like a holiday story, right. Like the Last Christmas, the Hellboy one, and then this one. They're all pretty fun. And I like that they use these like outsider heroes, you know, the anti-hero in these books. Because if I'm remembering in the Last Christmas, Santa goes like on a homicidal tear, right? Like he to get his like vigor back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I really loved all the stories within this Lobo book. Normally, like you, I'm not a Lobo fan. Now I'm familiar with him. He usually appears in a variety of the DC comics, usually just as kind of a joke slash like almost extreme version of the Punisher. But he has no moral code in the sense of the Punisher is trying to get criminals. Lobo just wants to get money and beer. And he's your almost a stereotypical biker. He's a caricature, but for some reason, I really enjoyed how he played in these different stories. And once again, the artwork was so visceral and so much texture that as 90s as it was when there's a scene later on in one of the stories where he's like sort of reborn and he gets super roided out. And with Colossus kind of like metal skin, I was all for it. I loved just how over the top his particular style is. And normally his, like if this was a running series and he was the main character, normally I'd find him very tired. Like he's super egotistical. He has a lot of hubris and there's ultra violence. Normally all those check boxes, I'm done with those kind of books. For some reason, maybe because it almost plays like a parody, I was all in.
And then a DC decider, I don't know who in DC, tried to make up a pretty boy character, right? Like to make him more appealing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when they rebooted DC a few years back and did the New 52, they actually created a new Lobo who was just your normal handsome-looking character, and people were up in arms because he didn't seem any more special than anyone else. And then later on, it turns out he was a faker, and the real quote-unquote – see, I can do it too, Johnny. the real quote-unquote Lobo came and basically killed him.
I see. So the imposter, but he was legitimately, that character was created to try and make him the new handsome, appealing Lobo. to sell more books. And everyone was like, no, this isn't.
Yeah, we don't want My Chemical Romance Lobo. We want White Zombie Lobo.
I think we're getting paid by the White Zombie or Rob Zombie reference and the quote unquote
right
saying. Like anytime. That's what I should have said at the beginning. This episode is sponsored by.
Right.
White Zombie. Is White Zombie even together anymore?
Well, Rob Zombie still tours. He tours on a regular. He's been to Sacramento a few times. I don't think White Zombie exists as a band, and I don't think he has any other bands like Maynard does for Tool and his various other projects.
That was a strange era. We're gonna sidetrack here, listeners, because Dennis and I are both old. We're on the precipice of being old, and that was a strange time in the early 90s, like 91, 92, 93-ish, when you had White Zombie, Guar, Green Jello / Green Jelly. And what was the other band? Like these, I guess the early days of Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson. Yeah, it was like that grungy, like dirty horror music, mm-hmm. you know, like. A lot of inspiration from, like just over the top horror, dirty.
Well, especially
music.
White Zombie took its lead from basically, horror films and exploitation films. That's why they would use clips in the beginning of their songs and such.
And maybe even Butthole Surfers, I'd put them on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Butthole Surfers, I would definitely.
Yeah, like in that same genre. Sorry to sidetrack there. Okay, so the second half or the second book is the Authority versus Lobo, Jingle Hell. And this little, and Jenny, a little girl, is she part of the DC continuity in any way, or is she just for this one story?
Well, I'm not too familiar. I think she's part of the Authority, which I am not a fan of the Authority because the Authority came from the Wildstorm comics. And
which is garbage,
right? Well, and in some cases, some of the characters are actually kind of homages / parodies of existing characters. For instance, there's a character very much like Batman who has a relationship. I think it's Midnighter who has a relationship with Apollo, who's more or less like Superman. So I'm not familiar with them. Once again, that whole '90s era, very sketchy for me. And and so she might be part of the regular. She sort of comes off as like that kid who can wish anything into reality from the Twilight Zone movies.
Yeah. Like she has a control of them because she can alter reality.
Right.
Maybe she's a play on like Jean Grey the Scarlet Witch or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this little girl is on this spaceship with the Authority, the group, the Authority, and she keeps getting bounced around from one team member to another. And all of them are engaged in the activities that this little girl should not be witnessing or seeing. There's a lot of fucking going on this ship or space station. I wasn't sure if it was a spaceship or a space station.
I think it's a spaceship. Yeah.
Okay. Not that it really makes a difference to the story. And then Jenny wanders off after getting repeatedly rebuked from these adults that should be looking after her and finds the comic book of the first story on the ship. So I don't know. It was a neat sort of story meta. Within a story.
Yeah,
meta story within a story. And so after she reads the book, she gets pissed off that Lobo killed Santa. Spoiler. And if you haven't read either of these stories, and then Jenny tasks the Authority team with going out and killing Lobo.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, a species contracts Lobo to kill the Authority team. It's a funny story. I think the first story is a little better. This one's. It's a good story, but I like the Lobo story better. The first story.
For sure. Although this particular story contains my favorite image, which is Lobo flying some sort of whale spaceship, pirate ship, which I found like amazingly great. And I actually want to make that like a wallpaper.
And there's also a really funny dig at the Silver Surfer in this. He's like, I don't know, he's a gold character
right.
who likes Lobo's bike. I thought that was a pretty funny little dig at the Silver Surfer. I feel bad for DC. They just always seem to misstep. I don't know why this popped into my head. Just everything. their movies, you know, and...
You know, to be honest, comics are hard because, and we've talked about this probably ad nauseum a few times, but one of the things that we, well, at least I like about Elseworlds is that the characters actually progress. You know, potentially Batman dies, potentially he gets old. With the mainstream canon comics, they're always forever living. I mean, the joke is that Batman never kills the Joker. Why don't you kill the Joker? Well, he can't, because if you actually killed the Joker, who would his arch rival be? And so they never really progress. They sort of do. There's certain arcs, but then they're forever eternal. They're you know, the same age. And so weirdly enough, Batman's always going to be 33, yet Nightwing somehow gets older, and it gets really weird.
His son Damian Wayne is now in his 30s and Batman's like 38.
Yeah. And so in some ways their growth is forever stunted. And whereas some comics, they're willing to actually have a timeline. Their characters grow old, they die, maybe their kids take over, which is why I always find it fascinating. Right now, DC is trying to do a thing where they're jumping ahead in the future with what they've done before. But now someone else is taking up the mantle of Batman. Someone else is taking up the mantle of Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy those stories. Now, will those things stick? Probably not, because guess what? People always want Bruce Wayne as Batman. People always want Diana as Wonder Woman. And people always want Superman to be Clark Kent. That's just, unfortunately, the nature of it. But those stories at least give them some room to breathe and try to tell something different, which is, once again, why I always enjoy the Elseworlds, whether, you know, we've covered ones where Batman is in, you know, the steampunk era or whatever. Those feel like they can actually progress and they would actually allow their Batman to die, so to speak. And yeah, that's why I have a problem with comics in general, where it's just forever the same thing. You know, this is like the 90th Joker story. How more original can it become?
Well, like one of the things I think is a good example of this, though, is like when you look at if at the time where we're recording this, Disney just debuted a, you know, basically everything for the next like 3 or 4 years that's going to be on like either Disney Plus or launched. And they had the trailer for the What If cartoons. Mm-hmm. That are going to cover those, what would be the Elseworlds for DC. And like, I was looking and I was watching, I was like, the animation for those looks phenomenally better than anything that DC has put out. And it's like, all right,
yeah, especially recently. Unfortunately, DC was the cream of the crop for a long time, especially with the Batman the animated series. And even later, like I was a fan of Batman Brave and the Bold, which was a little more cartoony, inspired by like the opening animation of like the Bob Kane-ish Batman 66 live action. But I feel like they don't know where they want to go. Do they always want to be dark and brooding, which hasn't paid off necessarily? So we'll see. We'll see their lineup. Wonder Woman 84 is supposed to debut on HBO Max come December, and I have high hopes for that. The new
going to come out the same week as this episode.
And Suicide Squad, done by Gunn, from Guardians of the Galaxy fame. That looks like a good one. And yeah, the cartoons haven't always been stellar hits as of late, but I'm hoping. I mean, if you watch Apocalypse War, which was their closer out for their DC animated universe, I actually found that very interesting, only because that actually allowed characters to die. That was the end of that multiverse. And so they actually did some stuff where characters were dying. There were some real stakes. And so I find those kind of stories, much like the Elseworld ones, great, because there's, you know, no holds barred. You know, whatever we need to do to put the story forward, we're not going to keep Lois Lane alive for a million years. And that's the problem I have with the current DC universe is, you know, now Superman is married to Lois Lane. He has a son who's basically Superboy. Like, how long are you going to keep him stuck as little Superboy? Now, there are some other spinoff stories that tell, you know, what happens when he grows up, but are we always going to have this little runt, you know, who wants to be Superman just tagging along? It's kind of annoying, to be perfectly honest. Just like Damian.
Well, on that note, would you recommend the book?
Oh, highly. And like I said, I am not a Lobo fan. I'm not an Authority fan. But the three stories together tell a nice tale. The first one's the strongest for me. But I felt that the overall stories were great. The artwork's phenomenal, very visceral. Like I said, I'm not a local fan. It is fun. It's great. Yeah. Not for the kids. Don't let the kids read it. but I would definitely at least borrow it, if not purchase.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, where can people follow the podcast?
You can follow us on Twitter or on Insta at Gene Explorers Club.
And it's been a not fond farewell to 2020. We'll be back in a few weeks with our new season of the show. Season 5. I can't believe it's been 5 seasons already, but I know. Coming up here. So, yeah. And thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. This has been a very difficult year for almost everybody. We hope you got through it okay. And we'll see you next year.
Happy New Year. You're not a professional.